Cincinnati Opera heads two blocks south to the School for Creative and Performing Arts to present a 21st century opera, Philip Glass's Galileo Galilei. The opera follows the aged Galileo, looking back on his achievements and on the accusations leveled against him by the Catholic Church. Tenor Richard Troxell sings Old Galileo, a role he's performed for the Portland Opera. And soprano and Cincinnati native Alexandra Shoney plays his daughter Marie Celeste. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Glass's score may come as a surprise to those who think of Philip Glass's music as repetitive and emotionally void. Richard Troxell, what discoveries are there for you in returning to this role?
There are actually great discoveries, because when I did it the first time, I did feel exactly that, that it was repetitive and emotionless. And then I came back to it, now having done it with orchestration, and it's really important that you hear his orchestrations, and I see it completely differently. I find it full of color and emotion. There are phrases I can't wait to sing, and there are phrases I can't wait to hear, because they have a lot of emotion and romanticism and more color than I heard the first time, more than just the repetitive ostinato that he's known for. So I'm excited about that.
Alexandra Shoney, you play Marie Celeste. Tell us about that character.
She's a ferociously intelligent character. Because she was an illegitimate child, she was put into a convent in her teens. And so she did not live in the world, but she knew very much of the world because she communicated with her father in hundreds of letters, which they sent back and forth, talking about the events of the day, the events that Galileo was experiencing when he was under scrutiny from the Catholic Church. She was the head of his household, ran his household from inside the convent where she was living in a state of nearly abject poverty because she was in the Sisterhood of the Poor Clares.
She helped with the experiments, too.
She did.
Really great scientist, actually.
Yeah, she had an amazing mind that was very unusual at the time of the Renaissance to be so literate, and her writing is so full of emotion and full of description and florid and really beautiful. She's a very interesting person.
And she was a cloistered nun.
She was a cloistered nun. She was not permitted to leave her nunnery very often.
So she became Galileo's confidant throughout all of his trials, throughout all of his life.
Absolutely.
And they communicated all through letters. And then Galileo basically burnt his letters to her. I think he wanted to protect her from any kind of incrimination.
So how do we know about this?
Oh, you know, basically in reading, we were just saying there's a great book called, is it Galileo's
Daughter by Dava Sobel.
You're a newcomer to the score. Richard is a veteran, but this is your first time out with a Glass score?
Yes, it is.
And what's been the biggest challenge for you in learning this?
I think the biggest challenge in learning a Glass score is that people see the score often as very repetitive, but actually there are many subtle changes in the way that phrases that start similarly or subtle chromatic changes that happen that change the color of the phrase when you repeat it. And so it's memorizing which change comes where. That's been the toughest thing for me.
But there are some moments of really just lyricism. For example, there's a scene with her and she's singing this wonderful coloratura-like passage over that repetitive ostinato. And it's almost like two different forces going in sync together.
Well, when you're singing a line like that, you always, as a singer, have to remember the smaller pulses that come within a large beat, and he makes that so easy. The lines are practically Strauss. They're so lyrical and so grand, and then underneath you have this driving pop that informs the forward motion of the music, of the lyrical line.
I think it's unusual that the aged Galileo is a tenor and young Galileo, who's played by CCM alum Andrew Garland, is a baritone.
Right.
That makes for some interesting emotional shifts.
Yeah, I'm not sure why he did that either. I really don't have an idea. I sing it and I'm not sure why he did that, because you would think the opposite.
It's also an opera that's performed without intermission. It's about
90 minutes.
90 minutes.
Right.
And you're on stage virtually.
Yeah, I can be. Depends on how the production goes. Because I'm in the first four scenes, and then Andy comes in because he's the younger version of me. And so in this production, I might be there observing all of that.
And I should mention, too, that the libretto is in English. How do you like singing in English, especially you've just finished singing in Italian, Alexandra?
Yes. Well, it's always a different challenge. I actually vocalize differently depending on the language that I'm singing in. If I'm singing in Italian, I vocalize on pure Italian vowels. If I'm singing in English, I vocalize, and depending on whether it's British English or American English. In American English, you vocalize on the American the sound or I or ah, so you can get that feeling in your mouth. That's it. Just a little bit of a different thing.
I'm glad it's in English, though. I think for this piece, it's great the audience can not have to translate.
And this really is a chamber work with a lot of pageantry in it. There's the trial for heresy, there's the visit of the three noble women who are captivated by Galileo's discoveries, and then there's the opera within an opera at the Medici Palace. So does it have that feeling of pageantry? Does that come across for you while you're singing the music, or do you still feel that it's very much a chamber work?
I think it's a chamber work. And being a chamber work, it also fits in the time period of Galileo and the Renaissance music, and there wasn't huge orchestral music going on at that time. So I think that Philip Glass wanted it to be more in the color of that time.
But he does very judiciously use the moments of pomp to write in vocal harmony. So it'll go to three voices or four voices. And because so much of the opera is single solo lines, when you hear all those voices together, it immediately elevates the feeling of the scene.
And he uses a lot of parallel fifths, parallel fourths. Right. So you get the whole sense of chant that was done in the church at the time and a lot of that feel.
Now, Galileo is the first opera to be performed as part of Cincinnati Opera's CO2 initiative, and it's going to be in the 750-seat Corbett Theater at SCPA. And that's less than 25% of the capacity of Music Hall. For both of you, other than the obvious difference of capacity, what are some of the advantages to a smaller hall?
You have a more intimate connection with the audience. You can feel them. You can hear them much more. And because in this opera we're working a lot with speaking directly to the audience, to have them spread out and so close to us really heightens that feeling of intimacy.
Yeah, I think it's how you tell the story. I think whenever you do an opera, when I'm in a 2,500-seat, 3,000-seat opera house singing Butterfly, I tell the story differently. And then when I sing it in a 700-seat house, I can tell the story more like I'm obviously communicating right to that people in the audience, right to that person. And it becomes much more intimate. And I notice that the audience, I think they feel it more because they are that close and they have to be invested and they can't be so anonymous when they watch it also. So your audience, sometimes the energy is better because they're really there. They're not looking through the program and opening a candy wrapper. So that's nice.
I agree.
Richard Troxell, you haven't been back to Cincinnati Opera since 1997, but you were telling me a little earlier that you feel like you got your start.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I feel as soon as I drove into Cincinnati and I walked in the music hall and I saw the green room, I just flashed back to 1996, actually, or earlier, when my career started with the film of Madame Butterfly. I got the role of Pinkerton, and then I was immediately sent out here to rehearse with James Conlon. And we started working on the whole score because I had never sung Butterfly. It was great. Every time I walk into a hall I haven't been into for a long time because I've been doing this a while, it just, you get a wash of memories. And this was a really good wash of memories. This is where it all began. It's kind of great.
Alexander Shoney, you are a Cincinnati native and you're here for the summer. What's it like on the stage of your hometown opera company?
Well, it's a joy. It's an honor. It's fantastic because I live overseas that my family can come and see my performances. And it makes this whole opera thing real for them because so much of my performing happens in Europe now. I remember sitting in music hall when I was a little girl and seeing the symphony and seeing the Messiah at Christmas time and breaking my neck looking up at the beautiful ceiling, and now I get to look at it from the other side, and it's such a joy.
Well, another thing smaller capacity means is that there are fewer seats, and there is limited availability, but tickets are going really fast. Thank you so much for joining me, Richard Troxell and Alexander Shoney, in Bocco al Lupo.
And Crepe Lupo.
Philip Glass's Galileo Galilei will be sung in English at the School for Creative and Performing Arts Corbett Auditorium. Performances run from July 11th through the 21st. You can find out more by going to our website, wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Ann Arenstein.